There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Tuesday. Glad you are here. Hey, Johnny, when did... This is a talk radio show. He's requesting songs. He said, play Baby It's Cold Outside. We can, although if you heard this morning, Johnny, I have the story out now, the stations are coming back to playing the song. Because let me tell you, I worked in music radio for a long time. There's a lot of people that are... They're easily led and distracted. How about that? But now they're saying, okay, now we're going to come back to playing the song. But this morning, we played the politically correct version from the Holderness family. And if we have time coming up, we'll get that on again, Johnny. So I will take that one request on this one day. It is second Tuesday of the month. That means Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us for Ask the Sheriff. Glad you're here.
Glad to be here, Sean. Thank you.
I want to talk about this book you handed me as well, plus the NBC 15 or the local 15 piece PMI. How about this to show you how old I am? The WPMI piece that ran about people that y'all capture, that go through the process, get sentenced to prison, and then they're out committing more crimes. You, as the start of this discussion, you have sat here many times and told me, Sean, if I could keep such percentage of people in jail, I could reduce the crime by a huge amount. You say it's really there's a small segment that commits the majority of the crime.
And that is so true. And it's just a travesty what has happened in the last couple of years with the parole board in the state of Alabama. They're releasing so many inmates after just a couple of years, maybe a tenth or 15th of their sentence.
Yeah, the repeat offender problem in our area. And is this, first of all, before we get into it, is this unique to us in Alabama? Is this an issue other states deal with? Other sheriffs, would other sheriffs be talking about this in the state of Texas or New York or California or Florida?
Well, some states have done some reforms, Louisiana, and I think Texas are known for having done some prison reform and who's being released and stuff like that. But I've not read any kind of... information where it's as disastrous as this is what's going on in Alabama. I mean, Alabama clearly is releasing people that should not be released. Apparently are not looking at their prior history of violence and repetitiveness. They're just trying to empty the cells, apparently, and they've done a good job of it.
Wow. At the same time, we hear that the prisons are overcrowded.
Well, the population certainly has been going down, and if it's overcrowded, that's not a reason to serious offender out. It's either you find another way to hold them, add more beds, build another prison, but you don't unleash them onto the innocent public.
But it seems like the idea, when you're talking about violent criminals, so we're not talking about the people who are in there for a drug crime or something.
Right.
If they're not, these are violent criminals. In the story that y'all did, where Andrew Ramey did for PMI, it goes down in the beginning of this piece. It goes down three or four cases right away, the ones that I absolutely am familiar with, where people came out, committed violence and murders, and they should have still been in prison.
Absolutely, they should have been in prison. And the parole board even apparently violated their own rules and regulations by not making them serve the minimum amount of time on rules before they set them up for a hearing and released them.
So this is, we've heard the discussion, the term catch and release.
Yes.
That's what we're dealing with.
We catch them. We put a lot of effort into building a good case. You know, a lot goes into being able to try somebody, convict them, or get them to plead guilty and send them to the penitentiary. The guy we arrested for armed robbery in Mobile County last Thursday, I think it was, he robbed two places at knife point, and then our deputies jumped him, and he was driving a stolen truck. He had a high-speed chase, crashed it out in Irvington, and they arrested him. He had just 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, gotten 20 years for armed robbery, 10 years for burglary, and another 10-year sentence for burglary. So he had 40 years. Now, the last two were to run concurrent with the 20. But at one time, he only served 51 days. He violated probation. But the maximum that he served was just 3 years on that 20 and 10 and 10. And he's already out.
Where, and I know it's in not all cases, but, I mean, you hear tax evasion cases where people go in and don't come out for 8 years. They truly don't come out for 8 years, and now you're telling me somebody who was facing 40 years was out in 51 days?
Yeah, at one time, yes. He had 19 years.
How does that happen?
Well, that's what we're beginning to start asking these questions. I was unaware they were coming out that early, but and then they've, you know, the way they build,
I mean, that's
good
beyond
time,
the pale. 51, I mean, that's like, that leaves me slack-jawed.
It does. I think that the director of the parole board has just took it upon himself to put anybody up there for to be paroled, and the board apparently is 2 out of 3 are voting for it.
How does in our state, how do we decide who is on the parole board? How's that adjudicated?
This is interesting because I'm just finding this out, but the parole board members, there's 3 of them. They're appointed by the governor, so they sit on it, but they have to later be ratified by the state senate.
Okay.
Now, the current director was appointed by the governor, sat on the parole board, and the Senate refused to confirm him. So he had to step down, and another person was put on there. The new 3 board members then hired him to be the executive director. It just, to me, it doesn't quite pass the smell test that if the state Senate, for whatever reason, felt like he was unqualified to be on the parole board, how could it be that he was qualified to be the director?
You mean the voice of the people in a republic where we're represented by our representatives in the Senate said no to this person?
Yes.
That's our voice being carried up
so
through Montgomery.
Of being a part-time employer or employee of 1 of 3 making decisions, now he becomes the main director.
So these 3 get confirmed and they turn around and hire this person as
that had been turned down by the Senate.
Unbelievable.
It is. I mean, we went from, I don't know, several years ago we had some top-notch people on it. We had a couple of former federal probation officers. They had professionalized the board, and now it's, I don't know, it's just, again, I was just blown away when I saw the statistics that I just recently became acquainted with, where they increased 50-something percent in 16 and more than that in 17.
Yeah, I get this idea that when somebody's being released from prison, either they are a nonviolent offender that is going to go, because I've been a big proponent, we've talked about it, by getting people into, they have drug issues, into a halfway house or somewhere to get them back into being part of society. Don't leave them in a prison their whole life. That or somebody that was a violent offender that's been in there for 4 decades and now they're coming out as an old man.
Yeah.
Those are the 2 things I pictured for parole, not people that just within a 3-year period had committed another violent crime and now they're out on the street.
That's correct. I mean, the parole board apparently has redefined the definition of a violent offense, and because they're letting murderers and robbers and others out on early parole.
You got to get real loose with your logic when you take somebody who's a murderer and say that's not a violent offender.
That's correct. You know, up in North Alabama, they released a guy, and 3 months later, released him early, real early, and 3 months later, he murdered 3 people, including a 70-year-old child.
And when we come back, I want to talk about the truth in sentencing. And you know, we've talked about this in the past. That was a big push.
Yeah.
But that sounds like that chain is only as strong as the link that is the parole board.
That's exactly right. Apparently, it's the parole board has chosen to interpret it however they want to interpret it.
How about this, y'all? Put a link to the story up on my Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5. We'll come back. More about this story and your questions for Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran right here on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
120 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. By the way, too, if you miss an hour of the show or one of the 40-some-odd hours of live programming we do, odd may be key for some of my shows, the hours of live local programming we do, you can always grab the podcast by going to our website, fmtalk1065.com, or subscribe and get it right there on your telephone, right, on your smartphone, iTunes or Stitcher, through the Spotify app. You can also be even tune in radio that you use to listen to and stream the station on your smartphone. Also as a repository for our podcast. So lots of ways to get it. And on a day like today, like when I get to talk to the sheriff, you may want to share this with somebody else out there and say, hey, did you know about this? Or if you're in a discussion with somebody about it, you can always send them back to this hour of the show. And talking about this, there's a almost hour-long piece up about this over at mynbc15.com, and this is, Sheriff, a discussion of the state parole board, the truth in sentencing statutes, and some things that really surprised me that I guess in Alabama I had this, you know, this is always the danger of assuming that people were sentenced for violent crimes. They served a majority of a sentence. I know people don't always serve the whole sentence, right. But you, when you said 51 days...
Yeah, I couldn't believe it.
You got my attention.
And
you
then, said, then I got another notification, someone coming up for a parole hearing that had only been there for 2 years and had a 20-year sentence, and they were bringing him up for a parole hearing.
Yeah, we had a parent just call who had a son that was murdered, and the murderer had a 20-year sentence. And she said the reason why she felt that he served the whole sentence, she went to every parole board meeting. Mm-hmm. And now this would have been in the past. You said there was a change here. How recently in the parole
just
board?
In the last couple of years, there's been a change. A former gentleman named Bill Wynn was on the parole board. He was a retired chief federal probation officer from Mobile. And then there was a federal probation officer out of Montgomery that was also on the parole board in... That was done when Riley was in office, put them on, was trying to professionalize and do this, but they've right. since come off the board, and things have gone downhill since then.
All right. You're talking about the process of being on the parole board. The people are appointed by the governor and then have to clear a Senate confirmation. David asks, are these Ivy appointments or Bentley's appointments that are on there now?
These are, well, I think one is an Ivy appointment, only one, and the other two are Bentley appointments.
And you said, if y'all didn't catch this in the first segment of talking about this, Sheriff Cochran said that there was somebody who was there who had been appointed by the governor, and I don't know if that was Bentley or Ivy that appointed that person.
I think that was Bentley.
Bentley appointed the person. Couldn't pass Senate confirmation, so what happened?
So he fell off the board, they appointed somebody else, and then once that third person was appointed, the three of them hired this person that was not passed by the Senate.
Hired him.
Yes, to be the executive director.
To the same place the Senate said, no, you can't be.
That's correct. Yes, I mean, it just seems like it don't pass the smell test, and I'm just starting to learn this, and I'm angered about it, and I intend on reaching out to the governor and to Senator Cam Ward, I think, because he has been a proponent of reducing the prison population, but I don't think he meant it to be done in this manner.
Right, and, you know, Cam's been on the show with us over the years, and, yeah, we've talked about the possibility of a federal takeover of the prisons, but, yeah, how you reduce that, how you get, and it's never been the discussion, I don't think any fair-minded discussion of prison overcrowding and making sure we do the best we can to have a decent prison system has discussed releasing violent criminals. It's always been like, okay, other than violent criminals, let's talk about the other side. Yeah. It's like the opening of every salvo of discussion here. But you're sitting here telling me, I'm looking at this piece, in fact, it is violent criminals that are getting out.
That's exactly right. And understand this, the majority of the ones in prison are violent offenders. There are very few property crimes. I mean, there's some go, obviously, but it's after they've been convicted multiple times. Now with the sentencing guideline change, some of them are fourth-degree people there on property crimes.
Fourth-degree, meaning?
It's a felony of the fourth degree. They can't even go to the penitentiary. They serve their time in the county jail now on certain
those
property
are the ones
offenses,
you...
and it's still a felony. They reduced the number of people going to the prison as well as emptying it out. And I did read an article. Cam Ward had stated that the guidelines or the laws that they passed in the had no indication or no desire to do what has happened, and that he is looking into it, and I certainly think he needs to. I think the state has a responsibility to the citizens to look and see what has gone off the rails there.
Well, this is somewhat of the missing link here, too, for kind of you know, regular folks that I know for you in your position as a sheriff look at the stories and go, holy cow, that person should have been, let alone people just out on bail before trial. I mean, you get people that are out of prison and you're like, they didn't learn anything. Well, yeah. Maybe they didn't have a chance because you're telling me these people get out so quickly. It really is something I would have failed that question if you'd asked me if violent criminals get out that early on their
sentences. Absolutely. Well, is murder a violent person? Is an armed robber a violent person? Here in 2016, or in 15, 38% of the people were granted parole that went up for the parole hearing. 17, it increased to 54%. And bear in mind that they're putting them on the agenda for a parole hearing before their own guidelines say they're due to be put on there.
Is that truth in sentencing? Explain truth in sentencing. What is that?
Well, truth and sentence, to me, truth and sentence is just trying to say you clearly define what you're going to be sentenced to and you're held to that. But it's clearly is not working. There was a bill passed 2 years ago, I think, refining some of the sentencing and stuff. But it did not say let all these violent offenders out. And just so that the parole board apparently has taken that law, misinterpreted it, and are just putting anybody and everybody on the agenda to be paroled.
I mean, thank goodness.
And if someone's not there on the front row arguing against it, then it seems like it's happening. And some of the victims are not being notified of the hearing. And this law was passed, they have to make a due diligence effort to notify the victim anytime someone comes up. And
victim's family or somebody has to be notified
that the person is coming up for parole. And as we found out, or as I found out last night, a lady in Mobile whose daughter was stabbed and nearly killed, stabbed in the heart, and she survived, but she underwent several surgeries and still has problems. They released her assailant, and they found out about it after 3 years. They thought she got 13 years. She thought, you know, I have at least 13 years before I have to deal with this. All of a sudden finds out she's been paroled. Well, the mom and the victim did raise the issue and said, look, we were never notified, and so they did reconvene a new hearing or something and revoked the lady's parole, and so she's back in there. But the shock and the harm this victim had to go through and relive just 3 years after being brutally stabbed.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine then they're to find out that they're out? So who oversees this? Who is on watch for what the parole board's doing when they're, it sounds like, dropping the ball here?
Well, I guess the governor is, really. It's a state agency.
Isn't it fair to ask? I mean, if they're like,
I think the governor and the state senate approves the parole board members. I think they should have some type of hearings or something, or appoint an investigator to get to the bottom of what is going on over there.
Well, you could have somebody in there
already out of the gate. Now we've got thousands of criminals have been released early, and we've got to deal with them all over again.
And absolutely. But then going forward, there has to be some, if a parole board is up there not doing its job or doing things that are either by the charter they're illegal or by the spirit are illegal, there has to be some mechanism in the state. You can't just say, well, they're there till.
Well, someone asked last night, do they have the authority? Well, by state law, the parole board does have the authority to parole somebody, but I think they adopt guidelines in all that they have to.
But do they have to go back and show that? So they parole whoever, Joe or Jane Smith, and comes back a situation like you're talking about. Can you go back to the parole board and say, did you confirm this? I mean, there has to be, or maybe there isn't, some sort of checklist.
It apparently doesn't appear that there is. I mean, they have
that's
records
scary,
and stuff like that.
Sheriff
they
Cochran.
Have to sign off. Sure, it's scary. I think it's just no one is holding them accountable, but finally we're getting some light of the day on it and just what has been going on, and I'm hoping that all this effort will bring light and bring changes.
If you got a question, comment on this, 343-0106, 343-0106. I know it's probably new for a lot of us to digest, and it's going to be something you want to talk about going forward, but it is, I can tell you, it's one of these places where, like we've always said, the danger of assuming what it does, but folks like me, I think there's a lot of me, assume that the parole board was doing the right thing, was being watched over. I've heard of, the notices to the family, either the victims or the family or loved ones of the victims before there's a parole hearing. I thought all these things always happened, and it sounds like here at home, they hadn't always been happening.
No. See, it goes on in Montgomery, and we just trust that they're doing the right thing in Montgomery. And
that's a dangerous thing to do.
Sure it is. But
So when when we look at this, the number of people you talked about, thousands.
Yeah.
That are here in our state right now that are out early.
Sure, absolutely. You know, and a judge hears the case or takes the pleadings, maybe after a jury trial even, and really becomes very well knowledgeable of the facts of the case, maybe spent days and hours on it, and finds a sentence, sentences them to prison, and then just somebody comes behind that and just undoes it in just a couple of years. And the judge thoughtfully maybe give them 20 years.
I mean, we've heard of the, if we've watched enough TV shows, okay, well, they're out on good behavior or something that. But it was always like they had been there a decade or so out of a, you know, 15-year term, and then they're out. But that's something for TV. It sounds like
they can build 4, 5, 6, 7 days for one day of good behavior. As the longer they stay, it doubles and quadruples how many days of good time they can build. First 30 days, they don't build any. I guess they're being evaluated. The second 30 days, they start building good time.
Okay.
After 3 months, and I don't have the schedule before me, it really starts jumping up and
At some point, you said quadruples?
Yeah, absolutely. Like 4 days for one.
So if you do that right, I mean, I know there's a little, you know, bit at the beginning, but a 20-year sentence can become a 5-year sentence?
Unless. Or they can come up for parole. Yeah, and come up for parole in less than that. They put them on an early parole.
Wow. So get your comments on this when we return. Phone number 343-0106, 343-0106. Sass the Sheriff, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran in the studio and ready to talk to you.
Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 135 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday. And, of course, you can check out the podcast of the show, maybe share it with somebody and go back and listen to it again, as this is really important. Plus, I put a link out to the MyNBC 15 story that details a lot of this, what we're talking about right now with Sheriff Sam Cochran. Also saw this. Sheriff, we're talking about the parole board with the state, and you think about the involvement here from the state. You said one of these parole board members was an appointee from Governor Ivey. The other two you thought were Bentley holdovers?
Yes, from Bentley, I think.
Okay, so that's who's on the board. The governor, Governor Ivey, has said they put like an executive order in to halt early paroles back in October. Mm-hmm. Now she has Attorney General in on this as well. Is that the corrective action I was asking about earlier? I mean, can these, if they're not doing their job, if it's malpractice, can they be removed?
They are appointed and ratified by the Senate, and I don't know that they can be removed, but I'm sure that the governor could ask for their resignations in most situations of appointees. When that's done, most people submit them upon request. And, you know, I think that the governor and attorney general at least have come across about the problem and see it and are looking into it, but I think they certainly need to look into it deeply and find out just who the somebody or some somebodies were behind this to do the damage that they've done.
Yeah, it says here from a story from WAAY-TV out of Huntsville. Thanks, Johnny, for sending this to me. Said 1 week ago, Ivey and Marshall released a scathing response to the parole board's corrective action plan. The attorney general and governor basically said the plan isn't good enough and told the parole board to go back to the drawing board. So they were given a chance. To correct this, and they failed at that. It sounds like, at least in the eyes of the governor and the attorney general.
And that's pretty telling, in my opinion, that, you know, if you point out to the fact that they're not doing what the governor and the attorney general and the leaders of the state feel that they should be doing, and it's obvious what they've done is made some terrible mistakes, and they still don't come back with a decent plan. We'll see what happens next.
Wow. Let's grab some phone calls here and text at 343-0106. Cindy in Mobile, first up, you're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Thanks for having me on. My question is, if the parole board is released a criminal and they commit another crime, can the new victim then have some kind of suit against the parole board?
I suspect not, because there's probably state immunity to the parole board, because obviously situations like that could occur. You know, not all of these things, you know, are preventable, but at the end of the day, the amount that they've let out, so many, but generally a state agency like that enjoys a certain amount of immunity under lawsuits.
So there's really no deterrent for them to do their job then?
None other than the governor or somebody removing them from office.
Right.
You know, and that's why the Senate has to confirm the appointees, and you know, that generally they should do their due diligence by looking at the backgrounds of the people. And then, of course, you may have heard where the executive director was not confirmed, but then was hired by the other three. To do the executive director job, so he puts the schedule in front of the three.
Just the good old boy.
It very well is. It seems like it could
like
be.
Nothing,
we just
don't think,
know.
You think things? Yeah, you know, we went through a little shakeup here in 2015 in the state.
Yeah.
You think maybe some? And it's
still
back
some
to the same old. It's the same old stuff.
It's how long do the repercussions stay with you?
That's right, Cindy. I believe I'm as slack-jawed as you are on this. Appreciate the call. Opens up a line at 343-0106. Yeah, back to that WAAY story. It says, in the governor and attorney general's response, they directly asked the parole board why it felt like there did not need to be any charges, any changes in executive leadership to senior staff positions. Quote here from Longshore, said, the way I read it, the senior staff is basically being held responsible for the situation. Longshore said, if the issue is executive leadership at the parole board, removing them from their jobs would be almost impossible, and things would have to be done through the state personnel department. You're telling me, as a citizen of our state, mm-hmm. we can have malpractice. And you look at this, and we'll see if it's been mm-hmm. out and proven, but it sure looks like it, circumstantial evidence-wise, that malpractice is being done by the parole board, and I can't do a dang thing about it.
Well, that's the essential of what he said in that quote, but I would disagree. I mean, the board members have a responsibility. If it's executive leadership is failing the personnel board, then all personnel boards have rules where you can find someone incompetent in their position or discipline them for making bad decisions.
But now it's up to the state
difficult.
Personnel board.
Yeah, well, they could overturn it. The parole board could, you know, bring charges. It's sort of similar to what we would do here locally. If you have a merit system employee, that doesn't mean you can't suspend them or fire them, but you do have to document why you're doing it. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, of cases where someone made the decision to put it on an early docket and paroled them, and they probably violated their own rules and regulations. No, it goes before the three parole.
Well, if let's say that you the governor or somebody, you move to suspend, you know, or fire these, mm-hmm. then they bring the suit up, you know, they challenge.
They'd
this.
Appeal it to the state personnel board. Now, see the three
who's on the personnel board
members,
while we're looking at.
I don't know who's on the state personnel board, but see the three parole commissioners, parole board members, they would be the ones to take action against the executive director if that's who they're referring to. Or people under him as well, they would have to sign off on to terminate or to demote them or something of that nature.
Because the executive director, as we found out, who could not be confirmed by the Senate, who was then hired by the three members of the parole board, does that executive director work at the pleasure of the parole board? Are they his boss?
They're his boss for sure, but I don't know if they work if he works at the pleasure of the board or if he's he's got merit system protection.
This is really something, and one would be too many. One would be too many when it affects, you know, your family,
sure.
or our community. But you're saying in our state, thousands.
I sent you a graph where the 56% of the last year that came up were paroled, and 38% I think the year before that, and it's just a steady thing, and. You know, the population has dropped by 4,000 or 5,000 in the last couple of years. And some of them could be end of sentences, but the majority of them are early releases.
Well, okay, because when I think about the overpopulation, the overcrowding in prison, I think about things we have talked about before, that for example, when the state, during Bentley, shut down a lot of mental health facilities, mm-hmm. it shifted those people from an actual place of treatment where they could get help
right.
to putting them on the street, making them a situation where sheriff's departments and police departments had to deal with them, right?
Right.
And
that's
then
right.
going into jails, maybe going back into prisons.
Prison,
I don't...
Right.
So that, I said, okay, those kind of people, there has to be a third way for those people. And then people that have a drug addiction issue or something like that, if you can work with them and get them out of jail, get them on the right path, I think that's a good thing. I never thought that the people that could be being let out would be people that hadn't served a scant portion of their sentence for violent crime. Murder, you said. Murder.
And robbery. First-degree robbery. First-degree robbery is where you use a threat of a weapon of force. So robbery is a threat of force, and you're using a weapon for first degree.
So
then there's a number of assaults and some of the, and oftentimes these cases are pled down to begin with. It's not what they started out with. You know, a lot of times they're like the woman the other night, it started out, should have been attempted murder. You stab somebody in the heart, you're pretty much attempting to kill them.
Yes.
But it was pled down to an assault rather than an attempted murder, and pled down, and she got 13 years.
And then out of that, she served what?
Three. Got out in three.
And the.
Now she got back in because they failed. There was a mistake by the parole board. And not notifying the victim. And
only because of a clerical error, basically.
Yeah, essentially.
And the job is, too, of the parole board, like you said, to do their best and due diligence to inform the victim or the victim's family that a parole date is coming up.
Exactly.
And that's not happening.
It's not happening. In a lot of cases, it's not happening because many victims have stepped up and said, I was never notified.
I mean, that to me, there's the easiest one. You can get into the discussion, which I think is the bigger one, of when people should be paroled and truth and sentencing. But that's failing to do. That seems like the lowest hanging fruit here. That's failing to do your job by the definition of the job, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, sure. So it's incompetence on somebody's part if they're failing to notify. But then, is it incompetence or is it willful on purpose? You know, let's not let the victim know what we're going to do. Let's parole them and send them to a different part of the state. And maybe that's why I think there needs to be an investigation of somebody to look into it.
Absolutely.
There's so many possibilities. Is this something being done on purpose or is it just incompetence?
Let me see. Was it on purpose? By design, people wanting to let violent offenders out?
Well, I mean, that's what needs to be investigated.
Who does that? Is that an ALEA investigation or how does that?
I think
Sheriff?
The governor. Again, has the overall authority for everything. It has executive authority over the state employees, and so I think the governor could appoint an investigator.
Out of the AG's office, or where does that come from? How does that?
Well, she's got the authority over the state police.
And, so ALEA would be.
So I think ALEA could. And, of course, the attorney general's office probably could investigate it as well.
Hey, speaking of ALEA, I had a text earlier about that. And maybe this is in reference with what's going on at Hoover. Maybe it's standalone. It says, has there ever been a case where the sheriff wanted to do something and was overruled by ALEA?
No. ALEA can investigate, not really overrule. And, of course, my opinion on the way the thing in Hoover's been handled is I would not have – I don't agree with the way it's been handled. When Hoover gave away – responsibility for the investigation, they gave away the ability to deal with and be transparent. ALEA doesn't have the sense and the responsibility to the citizens of Hoover, and so they can take the bureaucratic response like, well, we'll let the facts out when we get ready to at the end of the investigation. We learned through many of these major crises across the country the last few years how to handle these, like in St. Louis and stuff, how you've got to put information out to the people and let them
know. But
then
they had a presser too early. Now there's no information.
Kind of put a little bit, and then they just stopped everything. Well, I would have said, look, we're going to investigate because we have a responsibility to know what happened with our officer, what he did. ALEA can come along and investigate, or the FBI, or any state agency. I'm fine with that. But if it happened here and happened with me, I would not give up the authority because I want to know what happened as well as anybody else. And I don't want to put my reputation, my agency's reputation, in the hands of somebody else that I may have less confidence in.
Yeah,
they can come along with
it,
but
you would say, hey, okay, okay to the to ALEA, you can look over my shoulder, you can be here, our books are open to you.
Side by side, every report we write, you have every photograph we have, you have every outcome of evidence. But I'm not going to give up the authority because it doesn't take that long to figure out if somebody's done wrong or right. I mean, let's face it.
Makes complete sense here when you hear, you lay it out that way. Because I wondered, Hoover so quickly sent it to Jefferson County Sheriff's Office, and Jefferson County Sheriff's Office sends it
to
ALEA. And now the riots or the protests are going on in Hoover, but the decision-making on when things release or whatever information resides in Montgomery.
With the head of Alabama. Someone that doesn't answer to the citizens of Hoover.
Wow. Coming right back, more with Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff, 343-0106. 343-0106. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Just kind of hit me there during the news break, Sheriff, that out of all the judges, and let's start, the people that make the investigation and the arrest, out of all the law enforcement in the state at a municipal, county, state level, out of all the judges, all of the district attorneys, all the juries, out of all the people that are involved in the judicial system in our state, and then the people that run the prisons, it all boils down to the decisions of three
people. Three people do everything.
Look at this text here. In the late 80s, there was a serial robber rapist that targeted TCBYs. My wife was one of the robbed, but he raped the other girl there. He was caught and received life for the 22 acts. My wife testified against him, and he said he would get her. He escaped three times and received six life sentences. He was paroled after 25 years.
It's devastating to her.
Wow. Well, I will say that I know the texter, and she's probably pretty safe with that texter as her husband. But I mean, what a disgusting feeling. No, I mean, I make that point, but that's not really a point, because that feeling, like you said, this lady who had been stabbed in the heart.
And
the person's out after 3 years.
Right. And see, something like that just goes against our whole system. Our system is created to where the everyday citizens should not have to take law and order into their own hands. But if the system won't protect them, then aren't you advocating that? That's what the system is for.
All the talk, all the truth and sentencing talk, all the work of law enforcement and of district attorneys, judicial branch, and all that boils down to three people's decision. And in the cases you're laying out, too, not even doing the job. It's not even an opinion situation when they don't inform a loved one or the victim that the parole date's coming up. They've absolutely failed in their position.
Sure. Someone certainly has failed. Failed the public, failed you and me.
Let's go to the phones. Bill is in Mobile up next. Hey, Bill, you're on with Sheriff Cochran.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, Sheriff, I've always been a supporter of yours, and I think you've done a good job. But recently I went down to the jail to visit a child of mine, a granddaughter, and I see that you have a new policy where you actually have to pay to visit. And I think this is terrible. I think this is something that I don't know who thought this up, but...
Did you actually go down there?
Yes, I did.
You're supposed to be able to visit. You don't have to pay to visit. Use video down there. But if you wanted to video visit from your home or another location, there's a fee for that. But in the jail itself.
That's not what your personnel told me. They gave me a little pamphlet. And I said I had to call that number and all that. But I wanted to just sit up and talk to my granddaughter. And from what I understood from your personnel, that it was, you know, like $10-$15 for 20 minutes and something else for a shorter time. But your people aren't getting out correct information.
Well, I will check on that. I think there's obviously a misunderstanding, but we went to video visitation.
You do not have to pay them to visit?
Not if you go down to the jail itself.
In person, you're saying?
In person,
right. Only if you do the video?
Only if you do video visitation from an off-site location. So you could stay at your house, or if you lived in Mississippi or Louisiana, you could do video visitation.
And that's what cost.
But if you schedule a visit with regular visitation,
so
you
Bill
go
goes down
there.
Right, there should no be cost. No charge to
that's
see
correct.
His granddaughter.
I will view that pamphlet and make sure it expressly explains that.
I would appreciate that, Sheriff.
Well, I certainly appreciate you bringing it to our attention.
That's a good thing Hey, thank you, Bill. It's a good thing about what we do when you come by here.
Yeah,
we
get,
you talk about direct access to get questions answered.
Yeah.
That's there, because I didn't know that was a thing. So that is a thing that, so if somebody wants to be wherever, off-site, like you said, and do they go into a room and sit down with the video camera? How does that work? With
they have access to it in the cells or in the outside of the cells where they're still locked up, and it stops all the movement in the jail from having to walk an inmate, you know, maybe a couple hundred yards up to visitation, and the guard having to do that. They can actually do it themselves, you know, set it up themselves, and have more hours of seeing each other that way over video. But to schedule the visitation, whether it's in person or through video, you have to come to the jail.
Well, next time you come back, and hopefully it'll be very soon, but for sure we'll talk in January. We'll talk about the Meth Initiative book, How Mobile Beat the Meth Makers. What an interesting, when you handed it to me, I've already started poured into this thing. I'm ready to read it all.
Yeah, it tells the story of about an eight-year effort we did in conjunction with several of our partners in Mobile, and it essentially did away with the homemade labs in Mobile County. We went from having an explosion a week to maybe one or two a year, and stopped all the burn cases from going to South Alabama, and stopped the Smurfers from being able to go buy all the pseudoephedrine at the drugstores, and the mom and pop stores closed down or stopped selling the pseudoephedrine, and it's just within drugstores and it's all electronically. And it just tells that whole story. It's really how public policy and how government sometimes can work.
Absolutely. We'll talk about this more. Thanks for being here.
Sure. I'm glad. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Paul Feinbaum on the way next.